बंदे रूप सनातन रघुजग श्री जीव गोपाल को
भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Today we'll discuss a short overview of the fourth canto. There are 31 chapters in the fourth canto, and the prominent episodes are the prominent theme is Visarga, the creation done by the descendants of Brahmaji, and the prominent episodes are the episodes of Daksha, Sati, Shiva. That is one episode up to the seventh chapter. And from there, Dhruva Maharaj episode, 8th chapter to 12th chapter. And from there, small episodes of Vena, Anga Maharaj, that will come. Then a longer episode of Prithu Maharaj. Then Prachetas and Prachinabarhi. So these are the prominent sections in the fourth canto. So, Swayambhumanu had three daughters and two sons, and Devahuti, Akuti, Prasuti, and their descendants are described in the third canto last part and fourth canto first part up to seventh chapter. And the dynasties of the two sons of Swayambhumanu, they are described here. Uttanapada's dynasty is described from 8th chapter to 31st chapter, and Priyavarta's dynasty in the first 15 chapters of fifth canto. So majorly 8th canto, 4th canto describes the dynasty of Uttanapada from 8th chapter. Before that, Sati Shiva episode. So, the first four chapters of the third canto are a description of the meeting between Vidura and Uddhava. And from 5th chapter till 11th chapter, there is Sarga predominantly. And from 12th chapter, there is Visarga. That continues up to 15th chapter of 5th canto. So Brahmaji's creation and the descendants of Swayambhumanu and his descendants, all that. Sthanam is the 5th canto, 2nd half. We already discussed all this in the last few days. I'm not elaborating. So we'll begin from the 1st chapter. So 4th canto, another interesting aspect of 4th canto is that there are several Rajarshis mentioned in the fourth canto, and we hear their retirement stories. Dhruva Maharaj, Uttanapada Maharaj, beginning with Uttanapada retired at the right age. Then later Dhruva Maharaj retired. After that Anga Maharaj retired. Then Vena did not retire. He was made to retire. made to retire from his body only. The next, Prithu Maharaj retired at the right time. After that, Prachinabarhi retired because of the inspiration given by Narada Muni. Then Prachetas retired. So many retirement stories are there. Probably that inspired Vidura also. I need to inspire another retirement. So this whole fourth canto and the third canto, both these cantos were narrated by Maitreya Muni to Vidura. So Vidura had only two cantos. At the end of fourth canto, Vidura was so inspired to preach to Dhritarashtra. So I have heard so many retirement stories in the fourth canto, but I have still one blind brother who is not yet retired. So what happens after the last chapter of fourth canto is 13th chapter of first canto. So Vidura hears the whole description of these dynasties, dynasty of Uttanapada, and then he offers obeisances to Maitreya and he goes to Hastinapur and he very heavily preaches to Dhritarashtra and makes him quit home. And mainly there is one important section in this canto, that is Puranjan's episode. Prachinabarhi was so absorbed in his karmakandic rituals, and he was growing kushagras everywhere. So that he can perform rituals. Kushagras is one of the main ingredients that is needed to conduct any sacrifices. So he would organize one sacrifice at one place. Before the completion of that sacrifice, the preparations for the next sacrifice in a very next place are being made. And he will immediately commence the sacrifice there. So like that, he is continuing sacrifices. And at so many places he is doing the sacrifices and Kushagras is needed, and he is growing Kushagras throughout the kingdom. So Narada Muni went and told him, you are conducting so many sacrifices and you are killing so many animals. Do you know that all those animals are waiting for you? Are they waiting to kill you? So then Prachinavar, he said, oh please enlighten me, please, I don't know all this. Then he spoke an allegorical story, very strong allegorical story of Puranjan for 5 chapters. At the end of 5 chapters also Prachinavar, he did not understand, why you are telling me all these stories? That is you only. So actually Narada Muni indicated here that Puranjan is nothing but Prachinavar. It's you only, but that didn't get into his head. Then he directly spoke, he too spoke another allegory called deer allegory. After that he directly spoke about the transmigration of soul and importance of renunciation in devotional service. Then Prachinavar, he was inspired, I think I need to do devotional service. But okay, let my sons come back, Prachetas, let them come back and assume the roles of kings so that I can retire. But Narada Muni's inspiration was so strong that Prachinavar, he had to retire from his active political responsibilities even before Prachetas came and occupied the throne. So such powerful preaching of Narada Muni inspired this Vidura so much that I must do something to get Dhritarashtra out of Hastinapura. Right? So that's one aspect, retirement stories of the Rajarshis. So another aspect of fourth canto, before going into the sequential and chronological sequence of fourth canto episodes, I am just giving you a cross-sectional overview. One is retirement episodes. Second is prayers. We have so many wonderful devotees in the fourth canto offering such heartfelt prayers to the Lord when they received the darshan of the Lord, beginning with Dhruva mainly in Uttanapada's dynasty. Even before that also, in the fourth canto first chapter, this picture you see is Atri Muni. So he is offering prayers to the Lord, but he had a confusion background that we will see later. So that is one set of prayers of Atri Muni. Next, prayers of Daksha and many other sacrificial assembly members in Daksha's arena. So that's the second set of prayers that will come in the 7th chapter. And third is Dhrumara's prayers. That's pure devotee prayers. So Daksha's sacrificial arena, all these people offered prayers, but they are not considered very devotional, except few, 3-4 of them. So Daksha's prayers are devotees' prayers, pure devotees' prayers. After Daksha's prayers, we have prominently Prithu's prayers. So Prithu Maharaj also was given darshan by the Supreme Lord. He also offered heartfelt prayers. So if you move a little forward, then we have the prayers of Prachetas. So mainly these three devotional prayers, Prachetas, Prithu Maharaj and Dhruva Maharaj. From these three sets of prayers, we learn what are the common aspirations of a pure devotee. A pure devotee desires for the association of other devotees and to hear Krishna Katha in that association. Right? So you see, there is all these three sets of prayers have this one desire in common. They ask for this benediction. So Dhruva Maharaj says, Bhaktim Muhu Pravahatam Tvayime Prasango Bhuyad Ananta Mahatam Amalashayanam Yenanja Solbana Muru Vyasanam Bhavabdhim Neshye Bhavad Guna Katham Rutapana Maktaha. I am intoxicated by hearing the glories of your good self, my dear Lord. I need association of devotees who can just fill my ears with your katha. Bhavad Guna Katha. So that is his desire. Same thing Prithu Maharaj also. Sauttama Shloka Mahan Mukhachito Bhavat Padam Bhoja Sudha Kanailehi. And before that he also says, Nakamaye nata tadapyaham kochin nayatra yushmat charanam bujasavaha mahattamantar hridayan mukhachyutu vidhatsva karnayutameshamevaraha. Mahattama antar hridayan. When Mahattama, great devotees, who carry the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord within their hearts, when they speak, the saffron dust particles from that lotus feet of the Lord will emanate from their mouths. Please give me millions of ears to hear all those vibrations. This is the prayer of Prithu Maharaj. Right? So he wanted millions of ears. Not like competing with Indra. Indra had 1,000 days throughout the body, I want 1,000 years throughout my body. That's not the thing. We cannot take this literally. But he's expressing his eagerness. He's expressing his eagerness to hear about Krishna. Just like the gopis also express their eagerness to see Krishna, to see the beautiful form of Krishna. They say, Brahmaji is not very intelligent. He has given only 2 eyes. 2 eyes are sufficient to see the beauty of Krishna. And that too, these 2 eyes are constantly blinking. Within one blink, one eye blink, we experience millions of yugas of separation from Krishna's form. So he is not very intelligent. If at all he has some common sense, he should take advice from me. He should make me as his consultant and make eyes which that do not blink, so that we can see the form of Krishna constantly. And if possible, he should make millions of eyes, not only 2 eyes per body. That is their eagerness. So, like that, Prithu Maharaj expresses his eagerness to hear Krishna Katha in the association of devotees. Same thing he also says. Prachetas also say. They say, Yavatte maya sprishta bhramama iha karma bhihi. Tavat bhavat prasanganam sangasyanno bhave bhave. We don't mind transmigrating from one body to another body, one species to another species, because of our background, fruity baggage, karma. But we want the association of devotees and we want to hear Krishna Katha in that association. So these three prayers have this thing in common. Hearing in association. And there is one more thing in common. Dhruva Maharaj rejected the results of karma process and jnana process. I don't want to enter heavenly planets. I don't want to merge into impersonal Brahman. He rejected. Same thing Prithu Maharaj also has done. Varan vibhotat varadeshwarat buddha katham vrinite guanavikriyatmana ye narakanam api santi dehinam tanisha kaivalyapate vrininaja. If at all one has some sense and some buddhi, he would not request you for the benediction of entering heavenly planets. And although you are Kaivalyapati, bestower of liberation, nobody will request you Kaivalya, impersonal liberation. I don't want these two. He rejects. Prithu also rejects. Same thing, they also reject. Prachetas also reject. So what is worth aspiring for, what needs to be rejected, is depicted in the prayers of these three pure devotees. Prachetas, Prithu and Dhruva. They are like prominent episodes in the fourth canto. So they say that the happiness in Brahmananda or Swargananda is nothing, is cannot compare even to the particle of a drop of the Bhaktiananda. Right? So like that, they reject the results of other two processes. So by this prayer, they were also glorifying the superiority of Bhakti Yoga over the Jnana process and Karma process. When you are rejecting the results of Jnana process and Karma process, you are rejecting the paths also. When you are aspiring for the happiness of Bhakti, you are accepting this path also. And you are establishing its superiority also. These two things are very vividly done in these three prayers. And several prayers in Bhagavatam, especially in this fourth canto, we find this prominently in these three prayers. And we also see one more aspect. That is anger. We see the anger of Daksha. It destroyed him. We see the anger of Prithu Maharaj. Because he is a devotee and he had the humility to take guidance from another devotee. He was not affected by that anger, but that anger was disapproved. That also we can see. Right? And we also see the anger of Prachetas. They came out of the waters, and as soon as they came out, they saw
All the trees are growing. They became angry. Fire emanated from their mouths and they started burning all the trees. Then Brahmaji had to come and control them. Relax. And in the sixth canto, moon has come. So then Brahmaji gave them Marisha, the daughter of the trees, and they all married Marisha. So, like that. And what other episodes are there where anger? Prithu Maharaj also became angry. And Indra? Dhruva Maharaj, we already saw. Dhruva Maharaj, Manu. And Prithu Maharaj also became angry on Indra. He was picking his bow to attack Indra. But all the priests said, no, you are the owner of this sacrifice. You are not supposed to become angry. You are not supposed to sacrifice anybody. You are not supposed to kill anyone. We will kill. So we will chant mantras and get Indra fall in this sacrificial fire. You don't worry. You don't kill anyone. Then Brahmaji came and said, please, don't do all this. We just stop the sacrifice only. Then he was controlled. So like that, anger is also one prominent theme. Sati became angry on Daksha and condemned Daksha, right, in her things. So like that, there were many other prominent themes. We can also see the canto from the perspective of one theme. Chronological study is one thing, thematic study is another thing. You can see in Subodhini there are so many thematic compilations at the end. So all the verses or sections or pastimes coming, falling under one theme are kept at one place there. You can see, you can get, give me one copy just for a minute. Please give me. Common aspirations of devotees in page number 239. So that's what I just shared. Worshipping the lotus feet of the Lord, disinterest in liberation and heavenly planets, and association of devotees and hearing in that association. So prayers also is one theme. Gratitude. Dhruva's gratitude towards Suniti, Dhruva's gratitude towards the Lord, Daksha's gratitude towards Lord Shiva, which was not that pure at that point, and Prithu's gratitude towards four Kumaras, and Pracheta's gratitude towards Lord Shiva, and eagerness for renunciation we already saw about the four Kumaras. Anger also we have seen, and if you go through purports you get little more insights on anger and all that. So these are certain thematic outlooks for the fourth canto. Now we'll go to the chronological overview. So the first chapter of fourth canto describes the lineage of the daughters of Swayambhumanu. Swayambhumanu and Shatrupa had three daughters, Akuti, Prasuti and Devahuti. Akuti married Prajapati Ruchi and they begot Yajna and Dakshina. Both were portions of the Supreme Lord and His eternal consort. They were portions of Lakshmi Narayana. Actually, Manu already knew that the Supreme Lord is going to take birth from Akuti and Ruchi. So before their marriage only he kept a condition. If you get a son, you have to give me that son. I will adopt that son. So Ruchi agreed, and this principle is called Putrika Dharma. When the father of a girl does not have sons, then he can adopt the son of the daughter and raise him as his own son. That although he happens to be his grandson, but still he can raise him as his own son. But Manu had already two sons, Uttanapada and Parivartha, but still he wanted this. He applied this Putrika Dharma because he knew that the Supreme Lord is going to take birth from his daughter Akuti. So, but along with Yajna, Dakshina is also born. So, Prajapati Ruchi and Akuti kept Dakshina with them and gave Yajna to Swayambhumanu. And later, Yajna and Dakshina got married. And from their combination, 12 sons came home. They are called Tushitas. They are the 12 demigods in the Swayambhuman mantra. So there are six elements in a manvantara. Manvantara, Manurdeva, Manuputra, Sureshwara, Rishayo, Amshavatarascha, Harim, Shadvidham, Ucchate. So these six
office bearers or six main managers of this, six groups of main managers of a Manvantara are like this in the first Manvantara. In the first Manvantara, Manu is Swayambhu Manu. Devatas are these 12 Tushitas. And Manuputras are Priyavrata and Uttanapada. Indra is Yajna. And sages are Marichi and other people. And Manvantara Avatar is also Yajna. So, that is the genealogical line of Akuti, who was married to Prajapati Ruchi. So, only two children, right? And Devahuti's lineage was already described in the end of third canto. So, she gave birth to 9 daughters and 1 son. One son's activities, Kapila's activities are described in the third canto already, and his teachings were also described. And his 9 daughters were married to 9 sages. Kala got married to Marichi and they gave birth to Kashyapa and Puranima. Anasuya married Atri. Then their children are Dattatreya, Soma and Durvasa. Shraddha and Angira married. They got 3 daughters and 2 sons. Like that, all the descendants of these 9 daughters of Devahuti are described. So we will not read the names. And the story of Atri Muni, who married Anasuya, was more elaborately described. Because Vidura asked the question, why Brahma, Shiva, Vishnu, all 3 of them took birth in Atri's house? Then Maitri Muni answers, Atri performed austerities for 100 years. For what? He wanted a son as good as Jagadishwara, as good as the Supreme Lord in this universe. So there are 3 lords of this universe, Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, all are 3 lords only. And because Atri had a confusion about the identity of Jagadishwara, who exactly is that person? Is he Vishnu or Brahma or Shiva? That he exactly doesn't know. There is a confusion about in his mind about the identity of the Supreme Lord. So there must be some Supreme Lord, that much he knows. So let me pray to him. Let that greatest person come as my son. Like that. So, then all 3 lords came and said, we are all the Supreme Lords only. So, all of us will become your sons. So, we will, our partial expansions will come as your sons. So, the portions of Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva appeared as the sons of Atri, as Soma. Brahma's partial representation is Soma, Vishnu's partial expansion is Dattatreya and Shiva's partial representation is Durvasa. So, like that, these 3 personalities became the sons of Atri and Anasuya. So, Falashruti is that one who hears the descriptions of the lineage of Devahuti, they become purified. They will be relieved of all sinful reactions. Maitreya Muni gives this Falashruti. Next is the genealogical line of Prasuti. Prasuti married Daksha and they got 16 daughters. 13 of those daughters were given to Dharma. And they have different descendants. So one of those daughters, Murti, who married Dharma, she gave birth to Naranarayan Rishis. So Narayan and Narayan are counted as one. Just like 4 Kumaras, although there are 4 personalities, still they are counted as one personalities. One unit only. When you count 12 Mahajans, you don't count 4 Kumaras as 4 personalities and make it 15 Mahajans. It's 12 only. All 4 are one unit. Similarly, Naranarayana is also like one unit. Lagu Bhagavatamrita says like this. So, Naranarayana took birth, but there are 2 personalities. So, when Naranarayana appeared, there were auspicious signs in the atmosphere and devatas came and offered prayers. And after being worshipped by all these devatas, they went to Gandhamadana hill. And they entered Krishna and Arjuna. So that is about the first 13 daughters. First 13 daughters gave birth to different personalities. One daughter Murti gave birth to Naranarayana. And 14th daughter Swaha, she was given to Agni. And their sons are Pavamana, Pavaka and Suchi. They have total 3 sons. So, and these three sons begot 45 more children. So these 45 children and the 3 people here, total 48, plus Agni God himself, total 49. All these 49 people together are called fire gods. And their names are chanted in some Vedic sacrifices.
Then 15th daughter Swadha, she married Putris. And they begot Vayuna and Dharani. 16th daughter is Sati, she married Lord Shiva and she did not have a child. So why she did not give a child? Because she gave up her body prematurely. And before even giving birth to some children, she gave up her body because of certain tension or some dispute between Shiva and Daksha. So, in the second chapter beginning, Vidura asks this question. Why there was that dispute between Daksha and Shiva? How could Daksha hate Shiva? Shiva has all great qualities. He is very glorious. But how can Daksha, being a Prajapati, being the son of Brahma, hate Lord Shiva? And Daksha was affectionate towards daughter. So especially youngest daughter is an object of affection for the father. She is the 16th daughter, youngest. So she is supposed to receive all affection and love from the father. Why Daksha became very indifferent to her, so that she had to give up her body? That was the question asked by Vidura. Now Maitreya narrates. Once, the great leaders of the universe performed a great sacrifice. And so many demigods and sages, all of them were invited. They were just presiding that sacrifice. And Brahmaji was also sitting, Shiva was also sitting. And Daksha entered that sacrificial arena. And Daksha, the very name indicates that he is very expert. And expert in what? Expert in his job profile. What is his job profile? Prajapati. Prajapati means progenitor of mankind. Daksha Prajapati means expert progenitor of mankind. He is expert in producing children and increasing the population of the universe. Thus, Daksha's position as a Prajapati is very special. So he entered the sacrificial arena. Then, many people stood up. Everybody stood up to offer respects to Daksha. But Brahmaji did not stand up and Shiva did not stand up. Brahma happens to be the father of Daksha, so Daksha didn't mind if Brahma did not stand up. But Shiva happens to be the son-in-law of Daksha, because Daksha's daughter Sati married Shiva. So Daksha considered Shiva his subordinate, a junior to him. You are my son-in-law, so you are supposed to offer respects to me. So Shiva was absorbed in trance, he was in samadhi. He could not notice Daksha's entrance only. So Shiva did not stand up. Then Daksha became very angry on Shiva. Then Daksha spoke in front of the whole assembly very angrily. So I am speaking not out of arrogance or ignorance or envy. I am just speaking the conduct of sadhus in front of everyone, just to update all of you. Why in this context you have to speak about conduct of sadhus? Because I saw one asadhu here. He is not following the conduct of sadhus. So basically his enthusiasm is only to criticize and blaspheme and offend Lord Shiva in front of everyone, because he was holding a lot of envy towards Lord Shiva. So he said, Shiva is shameless. He destroyed the fame of Lokapalas, all the rulers. He is so proud. He accepted my daughter as his wife. That means he accepted me as his superior. He accepted me as father-in-law. He is supposed to respect me, but he failed to respect me. He did not stand up when I entered the assembly. He roams naked in crematorium. He laughs and he cries, and he is auspicious only in the name. He is insane and his followers are insane. He is the master of insane people. He is very dear to insane. So like that he used very poisonous words to describe Lord Shiva. And he is unclean externally also, internally also. His consciousness is poor and his body is also applied with all the crematorium ashes and then other things. So he doesn't appear clean. Only because Brahmaji, this Parameshti, insisted me, I had to give my daughter in marriage to Shiva. Otherwise I was never inclined to give my daughter to this unclean monkey-eyed rascal. I am not inclined. So he spoke such very harsh words. So may Shiva not receive any portion of the sacrifice. So generally all the demigods receive certain portions, oblations in any sacrifice. So Daksha cursed him
cursed Shiva not to receive any sacrificial oblations.
And he just left from there. So many people are coming and trying to control his anger and pacify him. Please don't go. You need to attend the sacrifice. Don't be so angry. Don't be upset. But Daksha did not listen to anyone. His anger completely overpowered him and he left the sacrificial assembly. And because of his envy towards Lord Shiva, he lost affection towards his daughter also. Right? So, now which is stronger? If a person, if we love a person, even if we don't love that object, certain object, if the person whom we are loving loves that object, our disrespect or disinterest in that object might kind of reduce. Right? But if we hate an object so much, and if our beloved person starts loving that object, depending on how big is our hate, our love may get reduced. Our love towards that person might get reduced. Now you see, Daksha had so much love and affection for Sati. And Daksha had a lot of envy and hatred towards Shiva. Which is more, the pastime is clearly showing. His envy towards Shiva is more than his affection towards daughter. If affection towards daughter is more, his envy towards Shiva would have been reduced. Right? Oh, although I am envious of him, after all, my daughter married him. So, let me just reduce my inimical feelings towards him. Let me make him my friend, like that. But, because his envy towards Shiva was so high, he gave up his affection for his daughter. And he did not even stop Sati when she was committing suicide also. Right? When she came on her own voluntarily to his house, still his heart did not melt and he became so indifferent to her. So Daksha's envy towards Shiva was so deep-rooted. That's why even in the next lifetime also, after 3 manvantaras also, he is affected by this envious feelings towards Lord Shiva. So Daksha blasphemed Shiva like that and he cursed Lord Shiva. And Nandishwara, who is an associate, very close associate and devotee of Lord Shiva, he became very offended. How can a faithful servant be keep quiet when his master is offended? So he started cursing Daksha and all the people who were supporting Daksha and who are the followers of Daksha. He said, become a fool, seeing in terms of bodies. All these Daksha and Daksha's followers, they should become fools. They will imbibe this bodily conception. They will reject the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They will become absorbed in karmakandic activities. And Daksha, specifically I curse him that he will get a head of goat very soon. And he will take repeated birth and death. And all the followers of Daksha, they become indiscriminate in eating. And they will wander about the earth as beggars. So this is basically curse to Brahmanas. Daksha is a Brahmana. So this kind of curses towards Brahmana spoken by Nandishwara are more vividly observed in Kali Yuga Brahmana sometimes. Right? So Nandishwara cursed like that. So however, like whether one principle in this context, Shiva did not approve Nandis becoming so agitated like that and then cursing. So when our master is keeping quiet, not trying to address the situation, the servant may, it may be better for the servant to follow the master's mood instead of taking the whole situation in one's own hands and trying to rectify the situation, right? Although it's all with good intentions, but if it is ultimately not approved by the master, it's not very much appreciated, right? So Shiva did not like this and he was keeping quiet, he was silent. Then Bhrugu got agitated. Because Nandishwara got agitated, he became angry. Then the person who is on the side of Daksha, that is Bhrugu, he got agitated. You are cursing Brahmanas, we curse, I curse all the followers of Lord Shiva. So he started counter-cursing. So let the followers of Lord Shiva become atheists. Let them become obstacles in genuine scriptures. Let them become addicted to intoxication. Let them take shelter of heretical views. And because they criticized Brahmanas and Vedas, whose subject matter is Lord Janardana, so let them
adopt deviant methods of spiritual practice, right? They can let them become heretics. So then Shiva did not speak a single word. Just to stop the show, stop this kind of cursing and counter-cursing, he just got up from the seat and left. So everybody's spirits were so agitated, so they are not in a position to be controlled. So one way of controlling is not trying to control, just silently walking out, right? Best retaliation is not retaliation, sometimes we say, right? So one thing is, when some senior people are not speaking much, the junior people probably, at sometimes it may be ideal for them to just keep quiet. Sometimes senior person may keep quiet, indicating to the junior person, you do the needful, right? But sometimes when they keep quiet, that's an indication to the junior person, you should also keep quiet, right? So one relevant example in this context was when Chitraketu criticized Lord Shiva. One of the points that Mother Sati, Parvati, spoke was, is he the appointed chastiser and controller to punish shameless people like us? Brahmaji forgot dharma or what? Narada Muni, four Kumaras, Bhrigu and all these great, great personalities, did they forget dharma? Who is he to speak dharma to us? That means, when so many people are keeping quiet, so many senior people, great people are keeping quiet, when a junior person, when a younger person is just exhibiting his knowledge in front of all of them in an uninvited manner, that will not be appreciated, right? So that's one of the points that we can learn from Sati Chitraketu example also, right? So Nandiswara was cursing about Shiva, just silently went out of the arena. But other people were there, they continued the sacrifice, they performed this 1,000-year sacrifice. So after some time, Daksha commenced another sacrifice. The tension between Daksha and Shiva continued, and they were still not in good terms, mainly because of Daksha's envy and anger. So after some time, Daksha started another sacrifice called Vajipaya. After some time, he started another sacrifice called Brihaspati Sava. So for these sacrifices that are being organized with Daksha, Shiva and his followers and his wife, Sati, none of them were invited. So Daksha was doing the sacrifice. But Sati, being an affectionate daughter of Daksha, she developed a desire that I want to go and attend this sacrifice. Sati heard about it. She overheard from different sources and she went and spoke to Lord Shiva. It is your father-in-law's sacrifice. All the demigods are going there. So my sisters are going, their husbands are going, so we will also go, right? So she had 15 sisters along with their husbands are going. So 16th daughter along with her husband is also supposed to go. So I have a great desire to meet my relatives, and if we go there, we will get so many gifts. And I am very longing to meet my sisters and aunt and mother. Sometimes the innocence of a person will make him or her lose the discrimination, and they give more importance to emotion than logic there, right? And sometimes it happens, and Sati is kind of representing that mentality in this context specifically. But we are no one to minimize her position. But at this point, she is behaving like that. So, and she also said, Shiva was not responding, and Shiva is expressing his disinterest in this proposal. But Sati said, don't have ideal expectations like me. Although you can keep aside all your emotions and affection and other sentiments, and then you can just be like a dhir push, absorb in your meditation. But don't have such ideal expectations. I am a normal conditioned soul. I am a simple woman. So see, other women are going with their husbands, decorating themselves nicely. So you protected everyone by drinking poison. So now you protect me by allowing me to go there. You also come. So one can go to relative's house even without invitation. I know your logic is that you didn't get any invitation card, so why should we go? But we can go to relative's house even without invitation.
And it's natural for a daughter to go to father's house. There are no formalities of invitation and other things. So you are merciful, please be merciful upon me. Next, Shiva started speaking. Your point is correct. We can go to a friend's house or a relative's house even without invitation, provided the host is not a fault finder. The host is not inclined to insult us or find fault in us or hate us or angry upon us. You need not go to a person's house uninvited if he is angry with you, if he hates you, although he happens to have a relationship with you. So thus, it's not worth going to Daksha's house. Now she says, but he has all six opulences. He is very good at, he has vidya, tapa, vitta, vapur, vaya, kula. So he has good education, he has done tapasya, he has a lot of wealth, he has a strong body, he has good lifespan, he is coming from a glorious dynasty, dynasty of Brahmaji directly. So he has all good qualities. So why are you saying that he is a fault finder and we should not go to his house? Now Shiva says again same thing, that all these good qualities are actually faults only if a person is filled with pride. A proud person, when he has these kinds of opulences, these opulences will only support and increase his pride and degrade him more. These are ordinarily good qualities. It's like, this is given, it's like a costly, valuable gem on the head of a snake, like that. Vidya tapo vitta vapur vayah kulaihi satam gunair shadbhira sattamitaraihi smritau hatayam vritamana vidrishah stabdhana pashyantihi dhama bhuyasa. So, six good qualities in a proud person are not actually ornaments, they are the causes of his degradation. And what is the effect of such degradation? He will disrespect, offend, blaspheme and criticize great devotees. Once degraded character manifests in his offensive attitude towards glorious people. So Daksha's, what is the proof for Daksha's degradation in spite of having all these qualities? He is offending another devotee. He is offending a demigod. So he is committing apradh towards Lord Shiva. Vaishnavanam yathasambhu. So Vaishnava apradh, he is committing Vaishnava apradh and the top grade Vaishnava apradh because he is offending the top grade Vaishnava. So, he does not see the glory of devotees. And further, you are saying that he is your father, I can go to his house. But harsh words of relatives are more painful than enemies' harsh words. Oh, he may be harsh to me, but still I can go. After all, he is my father. No, you can tolerate the harsh words of some ordinary people, common people or some other people. For example, we may go, say, in local train. Somebody, he's just pushing us or he may just chastise us because he's not getting entrance into it or he may not get seat or whatever. Will we get affected by it so much? Right? After journey there, you will forget also in 5 minutes. But inside the temple, one of our devotees only will start saying something. That will be more painful. Right? So, one of our co-residents of the temple, if they say something, it will be more painful. So, there's bitter words spoken by close relatives will cause more pain than bitter words spoken by other people or enemies. So, if you go to Daksha's house now, that will only be the cause of your humiliation and it is not very pleasant for you. And she says, I am his favorite daughter. Why will he be harsh to me? Yes, you are his favorite daughter, but he is tormented by your relationship with me. He doesn't like me. He may like you, but he doesn't like me. Because he doesn't like me and you are connected with me, his liking for you has gone. He has given up his affection towards you. Next she says, I think you hate him. It's not that he hates you or he hates me. You hate him. No, he is envious of my superior position. He hates me. Believe me. So Shiva is clarifying to Sati. Now she says, it's all your mistake only. That day when he entered the sacrificial assembly, you should have stood up. Why you didn't stand up? So the whole problem happened because you did not stand up that day.
So when someone is so obsessed with a desire, they will find all kinds of reasons to fulfill their desire. So you should have stood up that day. Now Shiva says, actually intelligent people respect the super soul within. You are saying that I did not respect him by getting up. Intelligent people respect super soul within. They worship the Lord. No, Sati says, super soul is there in Daksha's heart also. Why can't you respect him? Then Shiva says, I am actually meditating on the Supreme Lord in Samadhi, in trance. So by worshipping the Supreme Lord within my heart, Daksha is already respected. And this point everybody knows. I did not stand up when everybody was coming. Right? Everybody knows this. When someone is respecting the super soul within, Daksha is automatically respected. So, I didn't deliberately try to disrespect Daksha. So, please don't go. Whatever argument she must be having, Shiva logically countered them. But here, logic doesn't work. When emotion takes over, logic has to take a low profile. However much logic you may give to a person who is affected by emotions, he will not be convinced. So, Sati, it was a strong recommendation from Lord Shiva's side that don't go. He insulted me and he will insult you also. If you go, there will be only humiliation and even death also. So this is my understanding. So Shiva shared his understanding. But Sati was in two minds. Whether to follow husband's order or display my affection towards my father. Generally sadhaka, a struggling sadhaka also may kind of undergo this kind of turmoil sometimes. We have two options to choose. Emotion is pulling here, logic is pulling here. Protocol is pulling here and attachment is pulling here. Right, our affection for some object is pulling here and our subordination to a spiritual authority is pulling here. So we need to always make a choice, right? So Sati made a wrong choice here. So Shiva became silent, understanding that if she stays here, she will be destroyed. If she goes there, she will be destroyed. If she stays here, she will be destroyed by her unnecessary affection towards father and her moroseness and all that. When moroseness overwhelms a person, that person loses discrimination. Whatever Shiva said is all logically true, but that logic doesn't enter her. So thus, even if she forcefully stays back, because her mind is there only, she will be destroyed. And even if she goes there, definitely she will receive lot of indifference and neglect from that side, and then she will be destroyed there also. So he just became silent, understanding the whole situation. So Sati cried out of affection for her relatives, for her father especially. So then her intelligence was bewildered. She made a decision. She was going back and forth inside of the house or room, I don't know what it is. So she's going up and down like that, and occasionally at times she was looking at Shiva with very powerful glances as if to burn Shiva. She was very angry, she was so disappointed. But she made a decision, let me leave Shiva. Even if he doesn't come with me, I'll go alone. But Shiva, being a very affectionate husband, he wanted to protect her. So Shiva's followers understood the mood of their master that Sati needs protection. So all these followers followed Sati along with Nandi and many other Yakshas and all these people. And thousands of followers followed Mother Sati. So there was a big procession only. Sati was placed on a bull. She was given her favorite bird, Sarika, and a ball, and a lotus, a mirror, a white umbrella, a fan, and a garland, and so much of other paraphernalia was arranged so that she could be comfortably taken from Kailasha to Daksha sacrificial arena. And all these people in great procession, they were following. There was a nice painting also. So Sati thus entered the sacrificial arena of Daksha. So as soon as she entered, this mother and aunts and sisters received her very well. So because they never had any inimical feelings towards Sati, right? They were always affectionate. So they received. But we may get 100 things from 100 different people, but if you are expecting little attention from one person, and if you don't get it, we'll be disappointed. Sati was not at all impressed with all the nice, warm reception given by her mother and aunts and sisters. But she was affected by the cold reception given by her father. And there were some people also, because they were afraid of Daksha, they were not coming forward. Right? Sometimes emotion takes over, sometimes logic takes over. Right? So although this wives and Daksha's wife and other daughters, they respect Daksha for whatever he is, but when they want to display emotion, Daksha's displeasure will not mind to them. So they were emotionally attached to Sati, they can freely express that emotion, even in front of Daksha. But those people who are more reverentially connected to Daksha, they could not come forward. Right? So they just, so she received cold reception from those parties, and she received warm reception from this Daksha's other daughters. But whatever gift she was receiving, she refused all those gifts, and she refused to even sit down in a seat also. And she understood that in this great sacrifice there were no oblations meant for Lord Shiva. She became very angry. Shiva's followers understand the mood of Sati, right? Because their focus is on Sati. They did not come to enjoy in the sacrificial arena or attend this whole function there. Prasad Gavri. They were not looking for that. They just came following the indications of Lord Shiva just to assist and protect Mother Sati. So because they noticed some displeasure in her face, they said, okay, you are displeased, we will do the needful. Just give us orders. We will just attack Daksha. Then Sati said, no, we don't do all that. I will do the needful. So she started condemning Daksha. Who except you hates Lord Shiva, who is glorious in so many ways? She says, Shiva is the best of sadhus. There is sadhu, mahat, mahattara, mahattama. I think mahattama is also there, I think. Then there is asadhu, asadhutara, asadhutama, ati asadhutama. These are four gradations of good people and bad people. Shiva is on the fourth grade, right? Shiva is the best of all good people. You are the worst of all bad people. So she just gave a comparison between Shiva and Daksha. So Chakravartipad gives this eight levels of four levels of sadhus and four levels of asadhus. So she is the best of all sadhus. So ati sadhu mahattama, a great sadhu, what he does is, first sadhu sees good in others and he neglects the faults. So next level of sadhu, so he sees good and I don't remember the all gradation, but the ultimate sadhu is, even if he sees little good, he magnifies that good, and even if he sees lot of bad, he neglects it. So it's there in, suppose you can see. So I don't recollect now. So Vaishnavas, even if a Vaishnava tolerates the insult by other people, the dust from the lotus feet of a Vaishnava will not tolerate. Shiva must have tolerated your insult that day, but the dust from his lotus feet will not tolerate. Shiva's name is so auspicious that it destroys all sins. Shiva's fame is so pure. Shiva's orders cannot be neglected. Even Brahmaji is obliged to follow those orders. You offended Shiva, who is sought after by multiple people. Both materialists also worship the Lord, and transcendentalists also worship the Lord. Right? Shiva is a guide for both devotees and demons. So demons like Vrakasura, then Jayadratha, then who else? Ravana. So all these people also worship Lord Shiva to get his favor. And devotees like Prachetas, they also take guidance from Lord Shiva. Right? And that Sanatana Goswami, one Brahmana was there, so Shiva sends him to Sanatana Goswami. And Markandeya Rishi in the 12th canto, he was absorbed in his devotional service to Krishna and Naranarayana. So Shiva voluntarily comes and gives them guidance. So like that, Shiva is very merciful towards devotees. And Shiva, as a part of his post or whatever, he is also displays his mercy towards demons also. So demons also trust him. So he is respected by both materialistic people and transcendentalists. His foot wash is held on the head even by Brahmaji. And now that you have blasphemed Shiva, you have criticized and you have insulted Shiva, offended Shiva,
So what should be the attitude of a person who is such an offender of great people? Then she says this verse. Karnau pidhaya nirayad yada kalpa ishe dharma vitarya shrani bhirnru bhirasya mane chindya prasasya rishitam asatim prabhuschet jihivam asun apitato visurjet sa dharma. If a person hears the blasphemy of the Supreme Lord or another Vaishnava, one should block one's ears and leave that place if he is not having the capability to handle the situation or do something else. Or if he has ability, he can punish the offender and cut his tongue and kill him. Or he can give up one's life also. So, I don't want to kill you. I can kill you also, but I will not kill you. But I will give up my life. Because I am very insulted and I am very embarrassed and humiliated by my connection with you, right? My body is created by you and I feel ashamed to maintain this body and reside in this body. Self-realized Shiva, self-realized men like Shiva, they need not follow all this Pravritti Marga, Nivritti Marga, they are beyond all rules and regulations. You are criticizing him to be unclean, not following protocols, rules and regulations, etc., etc. But Shiva is beyond all of that. Right? You just follow your dharma and don't criticize other people. Don't criticize my husband. So opulence that we possess is unattainable by people like you who engage in some karmakandic sacrifices. So I cannot tolerate my connection with you anymore. So at this moment I just give up my body. So she invoked the fire element within her body and she self-emulated herself. And Daksha did not come forward. Although Sati is speaking so many words like this, Daksha's pride is so high, his indifference towards her is so high, his envy and anger towards Shiva was so high that he was not doing anything to stop her. So she dressed in yellow and she sat facing north, did achaman, got ready to perform yoga and meditating on the sweetness of the lotus feet of Lord Shiva, she gave up her body in samadhi. And there was a great cry arising from the sky. Seeing Sati's departure, everybody was astonished. It was astonishing that Daksha was so disrespectful and indifferent to her daughter, who is so chaste and honorable. So, he is so hard-hearted. He is unworthy of becoming a Brahmana. Although he is a Brahmana, he has no qualities of Brahmana. So, people were criticizing Daksha and blaspheming Daksha. So, basically, envy means self-envy. Prabhupada writes in one place. If you envy a person, that means you are envying yourself only. So, what to speak of Daksha, who is envying Lord Shiva? So, he is envying Shiva, he is blaspheming Shiva, he is criticizing Shiva, he is offending Shiva. No, whole world is offending him, whole world is criticizing him, whole world is disapproving his activities. Right? Nobody is approving what Daksha is saying or his whole disposition. Yeah, means that envy will ultimately kill us only. What is the effect of that envy? We want to harm the other person. So if we feel like harming other person out of our envy towards him, ultimately that is harmful to us only. Right? Whether we will be able to harm him or not, that's a different thing. But that envy itself will kill us. And we will be deprived of the satisfaction or peace which we deserve. Right? So that peace is gone in the mind. If there is no envy, then we will be able to understand Bhagavatam also, Nirmat Saranam Satam Vedyam, and we can remain peaceful also, like that. So Bhrigu Maharaj, as a Bhrigu Muni, he offered oblations to kill Shiva's followers, because when Sati gave up her body, so many followers of Lord Shiva, they got ready to kill Daksha. It is all because of Daksha, let's attack him and then kill him. They were coming forward like that. But Bhrigu offered some oblations to kill them. Powerful Ribhus came out and they appeared and they started attacking Shiva's followers. Then Shiva's followers just ran away from there. So this whole incident was reported to Shiva by Narada Muni. So what happened after that, we'll see after break.